And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. You know, the very masthead of our monthly newsletter that we send out by the thousands, and we'll be glad to give you a free sample edition of that newsletter if you request it of us, if you're not currently receiving it, or during the halftime, I guess you might call it, of this program, we always offer a book, tape, or video. And if you order anything from this ministry, and we'll give you the address to write to and the phone number and such. But anything that you order from us, well, you get a free subscription to my newsletter, Power of Prophecy. This month, the feature title is Where the Rich and Famous Dwell, Architectural Secrets of the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, Vanderbilts, Astors, DuPonts, and other storied bloodlines and dynasties of the Illuminati, where the rich and famous dwell. Well, of course, they dwell in habitats quite different than those that you and I live in, as an indication of the great wealth that they have amassed. Now, I don't want to talk about the architecture today of their dwelling places, their mansions and palaces of the rich, but I would like to talk about the attitude, the perception that these men have. You see, I'm convinced of something. Many people ask me, they write to me all the time and say, Tex, how can we change the world? Change seems to be a very important word now or phrase when you mix it with change in politics, change in religion, change in society. And of course, President Obama, or President-elect Obama, used the word change very cleverly and with great influence during this last election. And I was thinking about it. How can we change things for the better? Well, I'm not sure that we can without incredible effort. You see, the forces against us are forces of money. And they use this money to oppress the poor and the working class. And then they obtain more money through fraud and manipulation of markets, and through this defrauding of the everyday American, they're able to make even more money off of our backs. And I began to look really at this desire for money, this obsession of the Illuminati elite for the love and pursuit of money. Because believe me, it's not just loving money, it's loving the very pursuit of money. And I believe it is an affliction. Now, I know you can go to the American Society of Psychologists or Psychiatrists, and they may not have, you know, it classified as a mental disorder. But it is. An inordinate desire for the love of and pursuit of money. Cornelius Commodore Vanderbilt, of the Vanderbilt clan or dynasty, once was one of the, he was called the richest man in America. Cornelius, they call him Commodore Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee was named after him, and rightly so, since he gave millions of dollars for its foundation. There's a statue of him on campus there. Vanderbilt University. He built Grand Central Terminal I believe it probably is the largest and most magnificent train terminal or station in the world in New York City. And Mr. Vanderbilt informed people, and he wasn't very shy about it, that he had a love of money. He said, "I have been insane on the subject of money making all my life." Now, I like an honest admission there, at least, you know. He just came right out and told people, "I've been insane, out of my mind, on the subject of money making. Not just money, but making it." Well, today I want to talk to you about what I call is a sickness, a mental illness, or worse, a madness, that I simply call the King Midas syndrome. The King Midas syndrome, which is when a person's mind becomes diseased with the love and pursuit of money. Now you say, "Well, Tex, where are you taking us with this?" Well, I want you to understand something. This affects your daily life in a big, big way. If these evil men in their pursuit of money want what's in your pocketbook, well, you understand the implications, don't you? You know, these men of the conspiratorial elite, the Vanderbilts of this modern day world, remind me of that commercial on TV, you know, I think comes from a credit card company. And it always asks the question right after the little skit or the little commercial play. They ask, "What's in your wallet? What's in your wallet?" Well, it seems that the evil conspirators, in their lust for money, their affliction with the King Midas disease or syndrome, are constantly eyeing each one of us, you and me, and they're saying, "What's in your wallet that I can have, that I can take?" Whether through taxation or any other manipulation. If they can drive up the price of gasoline at the pump and take it out of your wallet, they'll do it. If they can drive up the price of bread and milk and coffee, they'll do it. If they can drive up the price of real estate, they'll take the money out of your wallet. If they can sell short the real estate and drive it down and make more money by breaking your back and taking away the equity in your home, they'll do that too. They'll get it going when the real estate market is moving straight upward, and then they'll cause a crash, and they'll make money going both ways off of you. You know, I remember reading years ago that Sir Winston Churchill was invited to the United States by Wall Street's financier, the Jew Bernard Baruch. B-A-R-U-C-H. Now, maybe many people today don't know who Bernard Baruch is. You know about the Rothschilds, Lord Jacob Rothschild over in England, his son Nathaniel Rothschild. You know about John D. Rockefeller, the late Rockefeller, and, of course, his son of today, David Rockefeller Sr., and his son, David Rockefeller Jr., both still living. But very few people know about a man named Bernard Baruch, but you should. He's done more to influence American history than almost any man. Now, Bernard Baruch was the chief counselor, I should say, an advisor in the White House to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President Roosevelt. And this same Mr. Baruch was a Wall Street banker. And not only did he advise Franklin Roosevelt, but he also advised Harry S. Truman later on after Roosevelt died. And he was advisor, financial advisor, and political advisor to Sir Winston Churchill from Great Britain. And he invited Mr. Churchill, the Prime Minister of England, to the United States. Actually invited Churchill before he even became Prime Minister. Because, you see, the wealthy of the Illuminati elite, had decided to promote Mr. Churchill, but they needed to teach him a little lesson. They wanted to show Mr. Churchill, the year was 1929, the week was the last week in October of that year, and they wanted to teach Sir Winston Churchill a little lesson in world finance. Now, it seems that Mr. Churchill, because he saw the stock markets of the world's developed countries, Britain, France, Italy, the United States, seemed to just keep going up, up, up during the 20s, the Roaring 20s, it was called. Mr. Churchill had quite a bit of his personal fortune in the stock market. He especially favored American stocks, because they seemed to boom and go up more than any other. And so he had quite a portfolio that was kept by his British stock market advisors. And, of course, that's the kind of thing that you keep confidential, how much you, own in stocks and real estate and cash accounts and so forth. So it was very confidential and very private information. In any case, Mr. Bernard Baruch, advisor to presidents, invited Mr. Churchill to come to America, and when Mr. Baruch called, well, you did what he wanted. Now, Churchill was a member of Parliament at the time, but had not yet become leader of his party, nor prime minister, of course, but he was a chosen one. He had been a member of the Order of Druids, the witchcraft secret society of England, as well as the Freemasons. And Mr. Churchill, actually, on his mother's side, was half Jew, besides. Now, Churchill came to the United States at the behest of Mr. Baruch, and Mr. Baruch said, I'd like to take you to Wall Street and Broad to visit the New York Stock Exchange. I know quite a few people there, Mr. Baruch said, and of course, Churchill knew that was so. And Mr. Baruch took Churchill to the floor of the exchange and sort of said, let's go up here to this. They had like a catboard walk and had a little, place that you just sort of overlooked the floor of the exchange below. And it was a burly place of hurly-burly activity and so forth, and men selling and bargaining and back and forth with little slips of paper in their hand and little messenger fellows running here and there. And Churchill said, very impressive, all these people buying and selling stocks. And Bernard looked at the clock on the wall and he said, Mr. Churchill, watch very carefully. Something will happen in approximately 3 minutes. Something will happen in approximately 3 minutes. Churchill was surprised, but he waited. And then came a clamor and a scream, and people began to moan and run back and forth and grab their hair and holler numbers out one to another and sell and almost stumble over each other. And the floor was full of people that were furious and panic. The newspapers the next morning had the headline, Black Friday on Wall Street. The stock market crashed that very day, and Churchill was crushed. And that night over dinner, totally distraught, he said to his friend Bernard Baruch, the American Wall Street Jewish financier, I'm ruined. Everything I had in the stock market, and today it crashed. And Mr. Baruch told him, oh, don't worry, Mr. Churchill. You see, I had my associates in London check your portfolio, and they gave me a list of every stock that you owned and the amount of shares. And so, he said, today, before the stock market crashed and before you and I visited Wall Street, I sold every share you had for a very high price. In your portfolio, there is nothing but money. You didn't lose 1 cent today. And Mr. Churchill, Prime Minister, later learned a great lesson. That stock markets crash and bull markets begin and end, and bear markets take over and grip the imagination and induce fear into the minds of men simply because the elite want it to be so. And we have been through an era here just recently where the stock market fell from almost 14,000 to a little bit less than 8,000 on the Dow just this very year. And I want you to understand something. I'm going to make a statement to you. There are psychopathic, sociopathic personality people on Wall Street and in the city. It's called the city, the financial district of London, and in Rome, and yes, in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and in Paris, that are just like Mr. Baruch. They are madmen. But they are not mad in the terms that we think of. They look okay. They dress good. They drive in limousines. They're being driven, I should say. And they seem perfectly normal. Why, even sophisticated, urbane, erudite, to use a big word. But believe me, they are psychopaths. They are sociopaths. And they commonly have a disease called the King Midas syndrome. You may recall the tale of King Midas. Remember that as a kid? King Midas was very, very rich, but he kept counting his gold coins, and he just loved it. He loved to count his gold. And his name was Midas, of course, and even named his little daughter Marigold after the flower, but also he liked that name because it had the word gold in it. He loved gold, very, very rich, had more gold than any other king in the world. And one room of his great castle was almost filled with gold coins. He was so fond of his gold that he loved it. He thought in his mind even more than his daughter, Marigold, or anything. His lovely little rosy-cheeked Marigold would come to the counting room where he was counting his gold and hug his neck and say, you know, Papa, I love you so very much. And he would say, okay, dear, okay, I'll talk to you later, but right now I'm busy counting my gold. Then one day, a beautiful fairy came to him. And in his hand, he carried a strange-looking wand. And he said, oh, King Midas, you're the richest man in the world. There's no king who has so much gold as you. Well, that may be, said the king. I have this whole room full of gold, but really I'm not happy. I want more. Are you sure? Asked the fairy. I'm very sure, answered the king. And so the fairy gave him a wish. And with that wish, the king said, I wish that everything I touch should turn to beautiful yellow gold. Your wish shall be granted, said the fairy. And so it became so. However, if you'll remember the fairy tale, the fairy told him, I warn you, O king, that this gift will not make you happy. I'll take that risk, the king said. Well, the very next day, King Midas arose to find that he had the power. Everything he touched turned to gold. The bed, as he got off the bed, it turned to gold. The chair that he sat in turned to gold. The table, he was wild with joy. Everything he touched, he ran around the palace or the castle touching things, and they all turned to gold. Well, he was hungry. He went down to eat, but a strange thing happened. He touched a glass of clear, cold water to drink, but it became solid gold. And he said, well, I'm thirsty. Well, that's too bad. The instant it touched his lips, it turned to gold. He was hungry, but he reached for the bread and the meat, and it turned to gold. Everything, gold, gold, gold. And suddenly, through the doorway came his beautiful little child, Marigold, and she ran and put her arms around him, and you know the story. She turned to solid gold. But he couldn't speak to her anymore. She couldn't move. Of all the living creatures, she was so dear to him, but all he had now was more gold. Why did he need more gold? He wanted his little baby back. And the end of the story goes, supposedly according to the legend, that a fairy returned and said, "Are you happy?" He said, "No, I'm not. I beg you, take away this horrible gift to make and create gold. Give me back my daughter." "Are you sure?" said the fairy. "Oh, yes, I'm sure. I've learned my lesson. I no longer think gold the greatest thing in the world." Well, and so everything was reversed. The king was able to eat. The king was able to see his beautiful young daughter again because he ran to her and he sprinkled water on her. That was the condition of the fairy. And she came back to life, energized again. Everything that he had turned to gold, he reverted it back. Now, it's a legend, of course. Or is it? Is it true life? Are these men so much psychopathic and sociopathic that they love their money more than they love people? I know that's true. They have a lust for money. You know, James, the brother of Jesus in the Bible, asked the question, why do men make wars? Why do they make wars? Well, you know, that's an interesting question, friends, because after all, America right now has military forces in 130 nations around the globe, and we're involved in two terrific wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and American soldiers each day, maybe not each day, but pretty often, are brought back in flag-draped coffins. I'm taping this program today on Veterans Day, so that means a lot to me, having spent over 20 years in the U.S. Air Force, retiring as an officer in 1982. I have a particular liking, maybe even a love, for the U.S. Air Force and Armed Forces. Well, James said that war comes about because of lust, the lust of the flesh. And money, the lust for it, is one of those reasons for war. Think about that. The lust of the flesh. That's why you have wars amongst yourselves, he said. The desire for money. Oh, no, we just wanted democracy to be brought to the world. That's why we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. We just wanted to bring peace and love and democracy. James in the Bible has a totally different picture of war than our political leaders and what they've taught us. Many years ago, there was a Marine Major General. He'd been Marine Commandant. That means a top Marine, head of all Marines. Smedley Butler was his name, General Butler. He wrote a little book. I'm going to have to offer that book through the ministry. Might have to print it myself. It's been out of print many years. But General Butler entitled his book. Now, this is after he retired, and he really began to think about it. The title of his book, War is a Racket. He said, I went down to Central America, to Honduras and those countries down there, and I brought military forces, and I conquered them. And I did it for this huge fruit company. I didn't do it for America. I went over to the Philippines, and I conquered the Philippines with a lot of loss of American life, and I did it for this other, and he named this other corporations. Then we got involved in this world war in Europe, World War I, and that was because of these other corporations. Now I'm getting a little older, and he says, and I realize all of my life I have been fighting wars and killing and seeing young men killed of our own nation for corporate greed. War is a racket. Well, Mr. Bernard Baruch, the man that I introduced to you before, had something very interesting to say. He was asked one time, why do nations fight wars? And he said something quite interesting. It's very simple. All wars, said Mr. Baruch, are economic in origin. All wars are economic in origin. Really? Economic in origin. A lot of people ask me about World War II, but wasn't Hitler a madman and didn't he hate the Jews? And is that why he wanted to be dictator of the world? Well, those things may or may not be so, but I have a little different take on World War II. Let me just give it to you very confidentially, although I wish you would tell other people. Regardless of how bad a man he was or what, you know, horrible conduct he may have been guilty of, the reason we went to war, or not because of those things, the war with Germany, it was simply this. Hitler took back his country from the Jewish bankers. He took back Germany from the Jewish bankers, and he started creating his own money. The money was absolutely corrupt, the currency, and of no usefulness at all. It took a whole, you know, wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread. It had become so inflated. He threw it all out and started a new money, a new currency based not on any similar organization like our Federal Reserve, but simply on the credit and faith of the new German Reich government. Whoa. In other words, he started a new currency regime. And guess what happened in Germany when he did that? The country boomed. And for about a decade, the bankers of this world could see that Germany was going to be such a great commercial and financial power that nothing could withstand it. But worse than that, the people of the world seeing how industrious, how happy, how contented were the majority, and I'm not saying everybody. Obviously, some were taken away to these work camps. They weren't very happy. And I'm not excusing any of that stuff. I'm simply saying that Hitler, like Henry Ford, began to build automobiles that people could afford, the Volkswagen. He was the first to build freeways, not just highways, but freeways, the Autobahn. Huge buildings, new cities, incredible prosperity. And the bankers of this world said, if everybody sees what's going on in Germany, before long, they'll want the same thing. They won't want the Federal Reserve to create the money, the fiat money. They'll want to take over the money systems themselves, and we Illuminati Jewish bankers will be out on the street. We cannot allow this. And they began a war against Hitler. That was the reason. They hated him because of their lust for money, and he had taken it away. And by his example, soon no one would want the Jewish bankers to run their country anymore. They couldn't stand for that. Hitler had to go. Now I'll be back with much more about the King Midas syndrome when we return in a minute. This is Power of Prophecy, and I am Tex Mars. This Tex Mars again. You know, I want you to discover the dark secrets of the lifestyles of the Illuminati rich and famous. And that's what my newest video, Where the Rich and Famous Dwell, that's where it'll take you, my friends. You'll be able to visit and peek inside the luxurious homes and mansions of the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Astors, the Vanderbilts, the Morgans, the DuPonts, the Gettys, and many others. Yes, they live in sumptuous estates, brimming with luxurious columns, statues, and art, outfitted with the richest woods, marble, and brass. But behind the thick walls and the iron gates of their dwellings also lurk some very sinister things. Here in this video, you will find evidence of covert satanic activity, Masonic architecture, devils in stone, gargoyles, occult presences, and entities, ancient mystery religion beasts. They're all there. Evidence of satanic habitation. You know, truly, the rich are different than you and me in more ways than simply the size of their bank accounts. I would say there's more demons living today in the Biltmore estate than in five or six subdivisions of the average American city. And you must discover the architectural secrets of these Illuminati dynasty families. Then you'll discover the mindset, the psychopathic, sociopathic King Midas syndrome with which these men and women are afflicted. They're sick. Unfortunately, their sickness leads to murderous criminal activity on their part against you and me and every other living human being on this planet. Where the rich and famous dwell 60 minutes, when you order this video, specify either the old format VHS, yes, we still have it for you, or DVD, the newest format. DVD or V, that's in Vic, as in victory, HS, as in house service, victory house service, VHS. Now, $25, but please add the $4 for shipping and handling. And my goodness, the shipping costs just keep going up. Postal cost, pretty soon, friends, the postal and the shipping is going to cost you as much as the product. It already is. You know, sometimes you order something for $7 or $8 online from some company. You find out the postage cost you $10. It's just ridiculous. Well, we're trying to hold the line and keep our postal cost as low as possible. But, well, $4 is about the minimum, really, when you think of the packaging and the labor that we have here in our warehouse and the postal rates that keep going up and UPS and, oh my, $29, let's just call it. That will take care of it all. And we'll ship it right out to you. We have plenty of copies. And it's our video. We don't have to order it from anybody. We'll go right downtown Austin. We have people that'll make them. We'll make as many copies as we need. I know this is going to be a big, big seller because we're taking you right inside the gates. You'll see it all. Some of this has never been shown before. It's never been in a video or pictures of any kind before. And you'll see it for the first time. And you'll hear my voice explaining it all to you as well. Okay. This compelling new video, DVD or VHS, please tell us which one you want, $29. To get it, just call us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673 here in the United States, 1-800-234, see how easy it is, 9673. You can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. It's right there on our homepage. Click, see a little preview even, and then just order it from us, and we'll get it right out to you. We don't mess around. You order something from us, it's out the door in a couple of days here. We guarantee that. Oh, we don't. Now, the Postal Service, every once in a while, they're a little bit late. That's their problem. And we try to prod them when we can and push them as much as we can. Sometimes I think they get angry at us, get mad at us. But we do. We push them even to to get this stuff out the door. Because I know when you order something, you want it, and we're going to get it to you. Now, again, where the rich and famous dwell, $29 will take care of it, postpaid, all the shipping and handling and all that. Use your charge card, MasterCard, Visa, or Discover. Or send us a check or money order or cash and disguise that, you know, by putting a piece of paper around it when you send it in the envelope. And address that to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. And remember, when you order anything at all from us, and even the audio tape or CD of this program today is available for $8 plus $4 shipping and handling. Ask for the program entitled The King Midas Syndrome. The King Midas Syndrome. And we'll be glad to get that to you as well. Okay. Our address one last time, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. And now let's return to our regular program. We're looking at the King Midas Syndrome, the maniacal desire for money. Did you know that sometimes even demons are called upon by the elite to help in their money making? That's right. For example, there is actually a demon of money, of prosperity, of treasure. He's called Asmodeus. He's the demon in charge of hidden treasures. And many of these people actually worship at the altar of Asmodeus. Some years ago, I was in a Baptist church, and the pastor was introduced to me, and he said to me, you know, I don't understand all this malarkey that you're teaching people about Freemasonry and the Masonic Lodge and these secret rituals of the occult. Nobody does that stuff anymore. That's so silly. That's what the pastor told me. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, you know, I don't want to insult you, Mr. Mars. But nobody really worships, you know, at these kinds of, you know, occult things. Isn't that just fairy tales? Isn't that just legends? I mean, come on. That's like in the movies. You don't really believe that, do you? I said, well, pastor, I'll tell you what. You buy me lunch today, and I'll inform you of something that might just cause you to think otherwise. Well, he and his lovely wife and my wife, Wanda, we all went to lunch together. And he said to me, well, you said you were going to inform me something, Tex. By that time, we were on first name basis. And I said, well, Charles, yes, I would like to tell you about a certain gentleman that is in your church, a certain gentleman that was at this service today, and I came to your church because his wife invited me. Really, he said. Yes, you will know them, and I gave them the name. And he said, yes, I know him. He's a fine gentleman. He's a fine gentleman. I said, yes, in fact, he went to the front of your church today and asked that your church members lay hands on him and pray for him. He said, oh, yes, I know him and his wife, the pastor said, and I know their daughter, and I know this, and I know he's one of the most reputable members of my. And I said, well, did you know that he's sexually abusing the daughter? Well, no. Mm-hmm. And did you know, pastor, that three or four times a week he goes out to a little forested area in the back of his home where he has set up an altar to the ancient Egyptian god of prosperity, and he lights black candles and does incantations to the devil that he learned from a Masonic lodge? Why, that cannot be. I said, every word of it is true. And the mother asked me to help her. And I've decided to tell you about it so you can assist. Since the man is such a reputable, highly esteemed member of your church. And so it went from there, and we were able to help the mother. And the man was called into the pastor's study and confessed to everything and said, yes, it's true. Where had he learned to worship at the altar of this Egyptian god of prosperity? Well, it seemed that the man was a carpenter and he was doing some work on a physician's house, a very wealthy physician. The physician was out of town, and while he was working on the project in the house, he saw a lot of Freemasonry literature from the lodge. And he picked up a booklet from the Masonic Lodge published by them, and it had all of these rituals. It explained exactly what you need to do to bring prosperity in your life. You must worship the ancient Egyptian god of prosperity. And it told him exactly how to do it. Go out into a nature area, light the black candles and the whole bit. He was seeking after the Egyptian god of prosperity, but he went to a Baptist church. And the very day he had gone down there to the altar and got on his knees and asked the men to lay hands on him while they were praying Jesus over him, he was praying to this ancient Egyptian devil. The pastor said to me earlier, you know, well, I don't have any of that going on in this church. Let's switch for a moment from religion, though, back to politics. You know, I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, and of course, I could have had 10 different doctorates by now, but I'm just too busy to pick up the certificates, I guess, or the diplomas. But I remember reading a very famous political psychologist. That's what he was. His name was Harold Laswell. He actually worked with the CIA during World War II. And if I can remember, I think he was from Harvard or Yale or one of those schools. Famous in American politics. In fact, he was head of the American Academy of Political Scientists or something. And as I was studying politics, I was struck by a textbook of Mr. Laswell's. And if I can recall, it was called The Politics of Psychopathology. Now, that struck my attention. And I guess I was just a weird college student because I was interested in things like that. And the other people just wanted to party and get along and all that. But I really wanted to learn things. And Dr. Harold Laswell, in his book, was quite interesting. But one of the things that he said, he had actually had a definition of politics, a definition. And since I was getting a degree in political science from a very well-established college or university at the time, I wanted to know what was the definition that Mr. Laswell gave for politics. Well, here it is. It's very simple. You don't even have to write it down. I bet you can remember it. He said that politics is the art and or science of who gets what, when, where, and how. That's it. Who gets what, when, where, and how. That's politics. Now you think about it. We have a new president now. We've just gone through a political process. Mr. McCain and Mr. Obama were fighting for the right to determine who gets what, when, where, and how. Who gets the money? What is in your wallet that they want to take? They're fighting for it. Well, Mr. Obama won. But as it turns out, the same bankers backed each of these gentlemen, Obama and McCain. And it's they that have your money in their little mind. They're the King Midas of this world. And they're saying, I want more gold. Give me more gold. And to get more gold, they'll even talk to the fairies. Some of them are fairies. But that's another story. They'll talk to the spirits. I was reading one time the works of a very famous European mystic named Emanuel Swedenborg. He was actually from Sweden, so his name seemed to match up very good. Emanuel Swedenborg. He was born 1688, died 1772, right about the time of our American Revolution, Declaration of Independence, 1776. So he died just a few short years before that. So he lived during that era. He was a brilliant scholar, Mr. Swedenborg was. He was widely recognized in his time for his expertise in geology and mineralogy. geology, and mineralogy. He was acclaimed as a university professor, was a member of the Swedish Parliament, and was recognized all over the world for his day for his research on metals or metallurgy and crystals. And he was especially interested in coins, their composition, their symbology, and so forth. Later in life, Mr. Swedenborg became very fascinated with occult and esoteric writings and literature. There is a church today, a denomination called the Church of Swedenborg. Swedenborgianism, they call it. Swedenborg, and by the way, it's a member even of the National Council of Churches. It's a recognized church, tax exempt and all that malarkey. Well, the official title of that church, I call them the Swedenborgianisms, or the Swedenborgians, excuse me. I guess what they believe would be Swedenborgianism. It's called the Church of the New Jerusalem. That's the official or formal title. Now, Swedenborg sought and acquired occultic abilities. Oh, yes, sometimes the devil will pleasure you with occultic powers. And it seems that Swedenborg had such powers. He claimed astral travel ability, spirit travel to other worlds to communicate with devils. Well, he called them spirits. He practiced automatic handwriting. And so he wrote volumes and essays, which he said the spirits dictated through his mind and his hands. He consulted a number of mediums, and then he would write commentaries on the Holy Bible. That's why they claim that the Church of the New Jerusalem is a Christian group today. And yet, he was a spirit, you know, channeler, you might say. One of the interesting things about Mr. Emanuel Swedenborg was that he said that he was fascinated to discover that the spirits loved money. Yeah, they loved money. And he said that when he was counting money or had a great sum of money, and remember, he was a coin collector, and he had all these coins from all over the world, and some of them were gold, and some of them were silver and copper. And he says that many times the spirits would come just to watch him in glee. They would enjoy just looking at all the money stacked up on his table. They were fascinated, obsessed, he said, with money. And you know, I began to think of this about Mr. Swedenborg. And you know, I think he was telling the truth, in this instance at least. And as I said, he was a great intellectual man. Now, I don't believe hardly a word of it, but I have the commentaries on the Holy Bible of Swedenborg in my library. They're quite interesting, if you're a New Age occultist, that is. But I always like to see what these men believe. And New Agers today, basically, most of them are Swedenborgians. They don't know it, but they are. But it's interesting to me, this man that they actually call the father of spiritualism, the father of communication with the spirits, said that the one thing the spirits are most interested in is money. But why should I be surprised? Because the Apostle Paul, in his letter to Timothy, said that the love of money was the root of all evil. And Jesus said the desire for money will bring a lot of misery to people. The desire for the things of this world, Jesus said, is a great downfall for man. Now, throughout history, the Illuminati of the world have sought money. Back in the days of King Solomon, Solomon was a godly man for a while, but then women turned his eye. But as the book of Kings in the Bible, there's two books. You need to read both of them, because the one that has to do with King Solomon is very interesting. After King Solomon departed from the truth of the great God of this universe and began to worship Moloch and Ashtoreth and the other false gods, because of these women that he had married and had his concubines, and they brought him into worship of these devil gods, the pagan gods, He perverted the very holy temple that he had built, King Solomon's temple. And he caused the priests there to become unholy and bring in these Asherah poles, these sex cultic objects. And it is said in the Bible that Solomon then ordered the priest of the temple that once each year they would pay him as king tribute with money. And specifically, Solomon ordered them to bring him as tribute, offer up to him exactly 666 talents of gold. Isn't that interesting? You know, I think Obama and his White House chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, will probably cause the bankers to bring them tribute of 666 talents of gold. Maybe not exactly that, you know, medium of exchange, but in one way or another, it will symbolize the number 666. And look at who he is associated with already, Mr. Obama. Warren Buffett, the richest man in the world. Robert Rubin, formerly of Goldman Sachs, and the Clinton Secretary of the Treasury. They say over the last couple of months that Henry Paulson, Bush's Secretary of the Treasury, communicated constantly. He and Obama sent text messages back to each other. It seems that Obama is very interested in money. Rahm Emanuel is a Wall Streeter himself and has raked in tens of millions of dollars from his ties with Wall Street. He was the negotiator for Nancy Pelosi, who worked with Wall Street for the $700 billion bailout package, Mr. Emanuel, and he was formerly on the board of either, I forget which one now, what does it matter, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, the Crooked Housing Group. Rahm Emanuel was their money man for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, or one or the other of them. Oh, where do the rich and famous dwell today? They dwell on Pennsylvania Avenue, or they will, beginning January the 20th, and they will decide who gets what, when, and how. That's what politics is all about. And you know, the Jewish Wall Street clan have always decided that, at least for the last century or so. Trotsky was a little communist printer who printed a newspaper called the Daily Worker that was printed out of the Bronx, New York. His name was Leon Bronstein. And the very rich Jewish Wall Street firm of the Warburgs took him and gave him millions of dollars and sent him over to Russia and said, you will help a man named Vladimir Lenin. You will change your name to Trotsky, and together you will overthrow the Romanov dynasty, the Tsar or King of Russia, and you will establish a communist regime there, but we will be the power behind the throne, the Warburgs, the Rothschilds, and the others. And so it was that during the entire Soviet era of communism, it was actually the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, and others who controlled that vast empire of blood and terror. Now, where did Obama come from? In coming weeks, I'm going to do a special report on President Barack Obama. And the man who will become his White House chief of staff is now a congressman, former Wall Street titan, a monster of a man. I simply call him Rahm Emanuel the Cruel. Rahm Emanuel the Cruel. You see, in Chicago politics, it's not the Daley faction that runs things. You know, Mayor Daley and all of them. It's not the blacks, Jesse Jackson of Operation Push and so forth, that run Chicago. It's not the mob, the remnants of the old Al Capone, Sam Giancana gang. It's the Jewish mafia. It's the same group that Meyer Lansky was in charge of. It's not the Sicilians or the Italians or the blacks. It's the Jews that run Chicago. And in Russia, it's the Jewish mafia. And in Britain, it's the Rothschilds. And in America, same thing. Same thing. We talked earlier about the wars in the Middle East. Afghanistan, about 30 years ago, was the world's principal source or originator of heroin. That was the heroin highway from Afghanistan to the rest of the world. But the Muslims came in. The Taliban were strict fundamentalists. And they said, grow poppies and manufacture heroin and ruin lives, and we will kill you. We'll cut off your neck. We'll execute you for this horrible crime. And it is a crime. But we overthrew the Taliban. And now Afghanistan again is the world's chief producer of heroin. And you don't think that all those American aircraft flying overhead with all of their multi-million dollar expensive surveillance cameras don't see what's going on below? You don't think that they control all the highways and byways and the Caspian Sea nearby and know about the heroin being shipped around the world? Of course, they are the people behind it. This is an industry like no other. Just like the CIA and the Israeli Mossad run all of the marijuana and cocaine from Mexico, Central and South America. And they don't bridge any competition. They don't want two-bit drug dealers trying to break into their fabulous global multi-billion dollar industry. Now, let's talk some more very quickly. We're running out of time here because I want you to know these people are afflicted with this King Midas syndrome, this obsession with money. Look at Skull and Bones, the pirate, the Skull and Bones, the Jolly Roger. They're out there doing what? Stealing money. The very pediment architecturally of Wall Street's New York Stock Exchange is the great goddess of prosperity. She's in stone. Now, I want to leave you with the words of Jesus Christ. What is the cure for this affliction? A young ruler came to Jesus. He was so rich. He said, Lord, what must I do to inherit the kingdom of heaven? You know the story. It ended with Jesus seeing him and loving him. And he told the young ruler, take all that you have and give it to the poor and come and follow me. You see, Jesus has treasures in heaven. Great, great treasures. No treasure on earth can compare to that. But the rich young ruler went away sad. He couldn't bear to part with it. And now Jesus is asking you and me today, forget about the money. Forget about prosperity. Forget about your home and your job and everything. Come. Follow me. That's the question, friend. Will you be rich toward God or toward mammon? This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. We've been examining the King Midas syndrome. I hope you're not afflicted with it. If you are, there is a remedy. His name is Jesus. Well, each week during this same time, my prayer is you'll tune in and discover the power of prophecy.